Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 12. Matsyo,
Matsyo,
Yuganta,
Yuganta,
Samaye,
Samaye,
Manuno Palabdha,
Manuno Palabdha,
Shonimayo,
Shonimayo,
Nikila,
Nikila,
Jiva,
Jiva,
Nikaya,
Nikaya,
Keta,
Keta,
Visram, Visram Sitan,
Uru
Baye Salile
Mokan
Me
Adaya
Tatra
Vijahara
Ha
Veda
Margan Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Mano. Wait a minute. Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabda.
Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabda.
Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta.
Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta.
Visram Sitanu Rubaye Salile Mukhan Me.
Visram Sitanu Rubaye Salile Mukhan Me.
Adaya Tatra Vijahara Naveda Margan.
Adaya Tatra Vijahara Naveda Margan.
Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabda.
Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabda.
Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta.
Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta.
Visram Sitanu Rubaye Salile Mukhan Me.
Visram Sitanu Rubaye Salile Mukhan Me.
Adaya Tatra Vijahara Naveda Margan.
Adaya Tatra Vijahara Naveda Margan.
Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabda.
Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabda.
Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta.
Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta.
Visram Sitanu Rubaye Salile Mukhan Me.
Visram Sitanu Rubaye Salile Mukhan Me.
Adaya Tatra Vijahara Naveda
Margan. Adaya Tatra Vijahara Naveda Margan. Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabda. Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta. Visram Sitan Urubaye Salile Mukhan Me. Adaya Tatra Vijahara Veda Margan. Matsyo Yuganta Samaye Manuno Palabdha. Shoni Mayo Nikila Jiva Nikaya Keta. Visram Sitan Urubaye Salile Mukhan Me. Adaya Tatra Vijahara Veda Margan. Matsyo yukanta samaye manuno palabda.
Matsyo yukanta samaye manuno palabda.
Shoni mayoni kale jivanikaya keta.
Shoni mayoni kila jivanikaya keta.
Vislam sitan urabhaye salile mukanne.
Vishram sitan urubhaye salile mukanne.
Adaya tatta vijaharahe vedamarga.
Adaya tatta vijaharahe vedamarga.
Mata Jesus.
Masyo yuganta samaye manuno palata.
Shoni mayoni kila jiva nikaya keta.
Vishram sitan urvaye salide mukanne.
Adaya tatra vijahara vedamarga.
Matsya.
Matsya.
Incarnation of the fish.
Incarnation of the fish.
Yuga anta.
Yuga anta.
At the end of the millennium.
At the end of the millennium.
Samaye.
Samaye.
At the time of.
At the time of.
Manuna.
Manuna.
The would-be vaivasvata manu.
The would-be vaivasvata manu.
Upalabdha.
Upalabdha.
Seen.
Seen.
Shoni maya.
Shoni maya.
Up to the earthly planets.
Up to the earthly planets.
Nikila.
Nikila.
All.
All.
Jiva.
Jiva.
Living entities.
Living entities.
Nikaya keta.
Nikaya keta.
Shelter for.
Shelter for.
Visram sitan.
Visram sitan.
Emanating from.
Emanating from.
Uru.
Uru.
Great.
Great.
Bahaye.
Bahaye.
Out of fear.
Out of fear.
Salile. In the water.
In the water.
Mukhat.
Mukhat.
From the mouth.
From the mouth.
May.
Mine.
Adaya.
Adaya.
Having taken to.
Having taken to.
Tatra.
Tatra.
There.
There.
Vijahara.
Vijahara.
Enjoyed.
Enjoyed.
Ha.
Ha.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Veda marga.
Veda marga.
All the Vedas.
All the Vedas.
Translation. At the end of the millennium, the would-be Vaivasvata Manu of the name Satyavrata would see that the Lord in the fish incarnation is the shelter of all kinds of living entities up to those in the earthly planets. Because of my fear of the vast water at the end of the millennium, the Vedas come out of my, Brahma's, mouth, and the Lord enjoys those vast waters and protects the Vedas. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. During one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus, and at the end of each Manu, there is devastation up to the earthly planets, and the vast water is fearful even to Brahma. So, in the beginning of the would-be Vaivasvata Manu, such devastation would be seen by him. There would be many other incidents also, such as the killing of the famous Shankasura. This foretelling is by the past experience of Brahmaji, who knew that in that fearful, devastating scene, the Vedas would come out of his mouth. But the Lord, in his fish incarnation, not only would save all living entities, namely the demigods, animals, men and great sages, but it would also save the Vedas. I'll read the verse again. Matsyo yuganta samaye manu no palabda shoni mayo nikila jiva nikaya keta visram sitanu rubaye salile mukan me adaya tatra vijahara naveda margan. At the end of the millennium, the would-be vaivasvata manu of the name Satyavrata would see that the Lord in the fish incarnation is the shelter of all kinds of living entities, up to those in the earthly planets. Because of my fear of the vast water at the end of the millennium, the Vedas come out of my, Brahma's, mouth, and the Lord enjoys those vast waters and protects the Vedas. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimani Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastyachyadeshatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pravanityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Vanchakalpa Tarubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Bhyeja Cha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Could I just ask, whose is that beautiful garment sort of decorating that chair? Could we relocate it? Because we may need the chair.
Is the chair needed?
It may be. It almost was. But then the situation changed. But it may still be. Life is like that. Yes, right. So, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations with Specific Function. Yes, this is along with First Canto Chapter 3. This is one of those chapters, those two at least particularly, in which are listed out various, at least, of the main incarnations, avatars, with different details and information about them. This particular chapter and chapter 3 of the first canto, which is perhaps a little more well known in that regard. Yeah. This is scheduled incarnations with specific functions. So there's an element like that in the descriptions of the particular incarnations here. To some degree, in some cases, slightly different, very slightly, from the description in the first canto. So here, this is nice, it's interesting, there are different interesting points which come out here. One is that Vaivasvata Manu, of the name Satyavrata, he, it appears from this description, and you know, of course, it's just makes sense anyway, that when he becomes the Manu, he is not just born into the role in the sense of that suddenly he appears and just that very day or maybe the next day he is now functioning as the Manu. He's a person, and as a person he is born and he is brought up and he's educated and trained and so on and so forth in a family which knows what his future is going to hold. He's not just in the situation like so many young people today. They reach a certain point in their youth and the question comes, what are you going to do? Well, I don't know. When I was young, and I do mean young, I thought I wanted to become a vet because I liked animals. And this, you know, I used to read books about children's books about animals. I wanted to become a vet. But I got a little older, and it lost its attractiveness. And then, anyway, then later, well, at the end of high school, or no, not the end, in the sort of middle, early to middle of high school, I decided I wanted to be something else. But in Vedic, like particularly classic Vedic society, like the demigods, human society may or may not be Vedic, like following Vedic principles and the Vedic scriptures. But demigod society, that's basically just how they live. And even when there's Kali Yuga and things deteriorate little bit, but they don't deviate from the Vedas. And the whole program of Vedic living, part of which is that when people are born in a particular family, then it's just assumed, and it's not just assumed, but it just is, that they are born in a family which has a particular nature and occupational proclivities and so on, because they're like that. Because they're like that. And therefore, in the Kshatriya families, like the Manus, they're Kshatriyas. Then the people, the children who are born in those families, it's just assumed, and it's, I don't know the percentage, but I'm sure it's at least 90%, if not more. They just have that nature. They just have that nature, and then they're trained on top of that, and they become highly qualified. So this Satyavrata then, who was going to become the Vaivasvata Manu, which is the current Manu, am I right? Tattvavit Prabhu. Vaivasvata is current. Seventh.
I would say yes, but, you know, I just, at the moment,
okay,
can't remember a reference.
Okay. Anyway, this one, Satyavrata. It was clear he's going to become the Manu. He was trained for that. And then, you know, while the previous Manu was doing his service, and then gradually that Manu came perhaps to the end of his life, or at least the end of his time as a Manu, and the time came for Satyavrata to start stepping forward. And this is what's being described here, that therefore he's described as the would-be. He will be, but he is not yet. So anyway, this terminology is used here, the would-be. He witnessed this. He witnessed this, what happened at the end of the previous Manu, or the interim period, something like that, where he is not yet, you know, completely into his role. And if I remember correctly, because I also don't remember so precisely, but when Matsya, who's described here, the fish incarnation, when he actually started performing his pastimes, he, among other things, pulled a boat. He had a sort of a horn or some sort of, you know, like special fin type thing on his back, and a boat was attached to that, and the great sages and other important persons, and it may even be Satyavrata himself, got into the boat, and they went through these waters of devastation, being pulled here and there by Matsya. Anyway, be that as it may, but the point particularly here is that Vaivasvata Manu, Satyavrata, he had not really stepped into his role yet. He's witnessing the end of the previous Manu and the interim period during which there's a devastation, a partial devastation of the universe, as Srila Prabhupada points out here, up to the earthly planets, up to and including, I think including, but at least up to. So it would be goodbye Chatsworth and, you know, Kramasha and Czech Republic too. Das Vidanya. So, there's all this devastation, not the higher planets, not above the earthly planets, plural planets, not just the earthly planet, but the earthly planets, yeah, but not beyond the earthly planets, those middle planets. And, yeah, yes, so Satyavrata then, he witnesses all of this. And it's quite a you know, very striking situation, even to the point that the second point is that Lord Brahma, who's witnessing all of this also, of course, from his higher position, but Lord Brahma becomes frightened. And because of his fear of the water, which is, you know, it's increased and it's filling up a substantial portion of the universe, because of that, even Lord Brahma becomes afraid. And in his condition of fear, either voluntarily or involuntarily, but one way or another, the Vedas come out of his mouth. And they are then taken by Lord Matsya, and he holds on to them, and we would assume gives them back to Brahma when the situation has changed or sort of reverted back to normal like that. So there's a few interesting points. One is just that sort of chronological perspective is interesting. You know, life amongst the demigods is life. It's full of events and happenings and ups and downs too, real downs. It's not just we are the demigods, we enjoy life, we are powerful, we manipulate everything. It's quite a sort of, well, you know, it's a very multifaceted situation, and there are many events of different types, including dramatic and difficult events. Yeah. Not as bad as living on planet Earth and 2017. Someone asked the other day in Lithuania, we were in Lithuania during the morning class, I think, someone asked, are things really deteriorating now? Are they? Or is it just, like a wave situation? Are things actually going down? And the more I think about it from my limited perspective, it seems to me things are going down. I think there's so much chaos. It's amazing. So for us, for the human beings, it's really quite, it's very dynamically, dramatically difficult. Even the heavenly planets, they have their serious ups and downs. Even to the point here that Lord Brahma becomes fearful. He becomes fearful, actually fearful. And in his state of fear, either voluntarily or involuntarily, he emits the Vedas, which are then saved by the Lord. As if he didn't do it, they might not survive. It's, that's amazing. And of course, another point that should be considered in that regard is that this happens after every Manu. And in one day of Brahma, there are 14. Means the daylight period, the 12 hours basically of daylight, there are 14 Manus. And at the end of the life or period of each Manu, there's one of these devastations. And Brahma becomes fearful. How would you like to live like that? That means, it's more often than every hour. It's like every 50 minutes. Brahma's in anxiety. What's going to happen? And he has to release the Vedas because he's thinking, if I don't, what's going to happen? Isn't that amazing? Now, we're living our lives here. It's not that every hour we're facing some such drama that we have to take some drastic action. But Lord Brahma is. Every hour or every 50 minutes, whatever it is, it's so bad. It's like panic stations. What to do? Only the Supreme Lord can save the day. There are other times, you may have heard, you may have read, it's described in the Bhagavad Gita. Lord Brahma, one time, during the day, he took a short nap. Somehow he was feeling a little fatigued. These things happen to devotees sometimes. Who could say they've never taken a short nap during the day? Prabhupada termed a short nap a snap. A short nap, a snap. So, Lord Brahma took a snap, just lay down, just briefly. He wasn't just going to sort of sleep. Just take a bit of a break to get a little refreshed and carry on. And as he was breathing while resting, the Vedas were coming out and going in, and a demon named Hayagriva, not the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, the horse-headed incarnation, but some demon named Hayagriva, when he breathed out the Vedas, that Hayagriva came and stole the Vedas. And if I remember correctly, the Lord had to incarnate to kill that Hayagriva and retrieve the Vedas. Right. So, and another, this is just very interesting anyway, but another interesting sort of aspect of that is that Lord Brahma, this is happening every hour. Every day. This is really happening a lot. It's really, really happening a lot. But somehow, every time, according to this, every time Lord Brahma, this happens and Lord Brahma gets into this condition every time. You'd think after history repeating itself, you know, 100, 200, 500, 1,000 times, you know, something like that, you think he'd get used to it and know that it's okay. Don't panic. Things will work out. Krishna's in control. But somehow it seems he doesn't, because here, what he's doing here, as Prabhupada says in the purport, this foretelling is by the past experience of Brahma. This is Brahma not telling us what happened. He's telling us what's going to happen. I'm going to become fearful. And I'm going to somehow release the Vedas from my mouth, and the Lord's going to protect them as he has done before. Anyway, these are just interesting little points, maybe not extremely crucial to our Krishna consciousness, but they're here and they are interesting. And ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and ultimately only the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saves the day and can save the day. And even Lord Brahma cannot deal with the situation completely. So therefore that point is there also, that it's really the Supreme Personality of Godhead who can be the shelter of all living entities at all times, under all circumstances. Other living entities, even ourselves, we can be shelters of other living entities in certain ways, different ways, and under different circumstances like that. Parents can be shelters for their children. Husband can be shelter for the wife, and vice versa sometimes. And vice versa. And some very astute politician may be a shelter for a country, at least to some degree. These things are possible, all different types of things like this are possible. But ultimately, the only complete shelter under all time, at all times, under all circumstances, in all places, past, present, future, the only person who can be the complete shelter is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to whatever degree anyone else can be any type of shelter to any one or any number of other living beings, it just depends on how much they're empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's all. That's all. And whatever, if it's spiritual shelter, material shelter, it all depends on the empowerment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, ultimately, in the final sort of issue, right at the final moment, then he is the complete shelter. And even when one is sheltered by others, and even if one is sort of nicely sheltered by others, one should still understand that the shelter, it's because of the empowerment of the Supreme Personality of God, his, you could say, sheltering potency. He can do that. And therefore Bhagavatam says, talking about materialists who are just involved on the material platform and dealing with other materialists and being whatever shelter is in their lives is just some, you know, different types of material shelter, financial, political, health shelter, etc., etc. So the Bhagavatam says, what is it? Bayam dvitiya binaveshatish syat. Bayam. Fear arises. Dvitiya binaveshita shat syat. Fear arises when we take shelter of a second person. Dvitiya, second person. Bayam dvitiya binaveshita syat. It's a very important statement from Srimad Bhagavatam. Fear arises when we take shelter of a second person. Of course, the first person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if we take shelter of others, and of course, particularly it's referring to people on the material level, then inevitably fear will occur. Fear will arise. Because whatever shelter or shelters we're getting from the materialistic people, they are going to be limited. They also, in many cases, will be temporary. And like this. So, I read a few years ago, actually, I saw an article in some Indian news magazine about the freedom fighters from, you know, those days, what was it, 70 years ago or whatever it was, those men who struggled, and quite some number of them were killed, and many who were not killed were lucky not to be killed, and many of them suffered. Even though they weren't killed, they were imprisoned and abused and so on like that. So this particular article was, like, it's one of these things you may have seen before. Where are they now? What's their situation now? This is like maybe 5 years ago. Of course, many of them now are already dead, but still some are living. And so where are they now? And this article took us to a sort of like a barracks or dormitory type arrangement. Some, you know, quite big, but very simple. Emphasis being on very and simple. They're these ones who, I guess, they didn't have families for whatever reason. They're living like that. And you know what it's like. Anyway, I don't know if you do, but living in a sort of a barracks or a dormitory, you have bunks, two levels usually. That's how they are living. That's how they are living, in sleeping in bunks. And those bunks, the sets of bunks, were like that far apart. In other words, it was really not nice. Who would volunteer to live like that? I mean, which materialistic person would volunteer to live like that? And that's what they got for risking their lives for years to fight and struggle for the, you know, it's all quote-unquote freedom of the country. So, you know, I thought it was a very good example that you fight for your ideals, which are shared by so many people, and, you know, in other words, you're basically like a hero. The others may be sitting at home and just sort of taking it lying down, But you're not. You're out there trying to change things. And then when things change, you expect to be sheltered. You expect to be looked after. One would think you must be looked after, but you end up in the barracks with all these other old men just struggling to stay alive a few more years. So bayam dutiya binaveshatasya. You know, many of these young men who fight in wars like the Second World War and even Vietnam and Korean War and so on, they came home and immediately they were disadvantaged. Immediately, it was difficult to get back into regular life and get a position and get a decent income, etc., etc. Oh, Krishna, bayam dvitiya binaveshatasyat. Fear arises when you take shelter of anyone other than Krishna, or, you know, in Nectar of Devotion, when pure devotional service is defined as being for Krishna, that definition is also expanded to include Krishna's expansions. It's also expanded to include Krishna's devotees. Yeah. So, bayam dutiya binaveshatasyat, in that sense, means that when we're not under the shelter of Krishna or his expansions or his devotees, and then, let's face it, sometimes the devotees, some devotees let down other people. But anyway, the basic idea is, unless you're sheltered by those people, you're going to be in a position of fear. It's just inevitable. It's simply inevitable. I've mentioned before, some of you may remember, when Ronald Reagan was elected president of America, a person who had no sort of managerial experience at all, but he was very sort of, because he was an actor, very flamboyant, charismatic, clever, and knew how to say things and with the right emotions and, you know, like this. I saw a cartoon, and it was Ronald Reagan with a machete running into a jungle. And in the jungle were these evil-looking eyes here and there, like, you know, these nasty creatures are just going to get you. But he's running into the jungle like, hey, it's nice, and I've got a machete, no problem. And there are two people watching, and they're talking to each other, and one of them said to the other, I don't know where he's going, but I like the way he leads. Anyway, bayam dvitiya binaveshatasyat. So as devotees, as practicing devotees, we have to practice taking shelter of the Lord. This, of course, is a very difficult situation. The whole universe, or, you know, substantial part being inundated, Brahma becomes frightened and takes shelter of the Lord. So we also, from time to time, will face difficult situations which sort of, in a natural way, tend to prompt us, hey, I should take shelter of the Lord here. But we have to practice taking shelter of the Lord even when there's no difficulty. In one sense, that's more critical. Learning how to be sheltered and take the shelter and get the shelter of the Lord, even when things are, in a certain sense, going very nicely. Yeah. Let me close by telling you one little story some of you have heard. one devotee, I won't mention his name, just returned to Bombay from a very successful preaching mission, him and another devotee in South India in the very early days, and came back and met Prabhupada in Bombay, and they're on a morning walk, and he's telling Prabhupada, yes, we did this, and we made members and collected donations, and wow, it was really good. It was really good. But sometimes I still feel the influence of Maya. And Prabhupada stopped and said, you are always in Maya. It's easier to appreciate that when things are difficult. And it's more difficult to appreciate when things are going well. But as devotees, we have to practice. Sadhana bhakti means the practice of devotional service. So we have to practice taking shelter, whatever the circumstances may appear to be. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any comments, questions, Tattvavit Prabhu, words of wisdom?
Thanks, Maharaj, for the class. I appreciate the message about taking shelter. At the beginning of the class, I was thinking that this verse might be interesting to environmentalists. You know, they're so concerned about the oceans rising.
Okay, that's true.
And they're even storing up seeds and seed banks, you know,
yes,
to preserve.
Right.
It's amazing that devastation, partial devastation, happens so frequently. We have to be prepared for a lot of setbacks, it seems.
Yes, true. Good point. Thank you. Any other comment or question? Yes, ma'am.
It seems like we had the World War I, World War II. It seems like they were more barbaric as well at that time.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. You know, they're a barbaric people today. You know, what we don't read about, what soldiers do, what we don't read about, what they do some barbaric things. No, we read, or, you know, you can read if you want, about the atrocities of the Japanese, for example, in the Second World War, the atrocities of the Germans, of the Nazis, and they did atrocities. But you don't read about the atrocities done by the British or the Americans. I actually looked once. I did a Google search. Couldn't find. I just found a few little things. Nothing like, you know, really serious. Because, you know, famous saying, the history books are written by the winners. Yeah. The history books are written by the winners. So why can't you find records now, at least, you know, anything like the atrocities of the Nazis and the Japanese in the Second World War? Why? Because the winners wrote the history books. And that's what we got. And the British and Americans and all their team, they're the good guys. They're not good guys. Whoa. It's shocking. That, you know, that demoniac tendency to abuse others, to hurt others. Yeah. It's deeply ingrained in the hearts of, you know, so many conditioned souls. When things are okay, they're sort of, you know, pleasant enough people. But when they get into some more drastic situation, the nasty side comes out. But anyway, whether it is more degraded or was more degraded, you know, it's definitely degraded enough now. And it requires very serious action. spreading Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.